Hey, you're on. Welcome.
Good morning, afternoon. How are you?
Good, great.
Good. Larry and Barry should be picking up momentarily here.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm on.
Good. Hey, real quick. Rob, who does that institute in Orlando, the one on the
Jim Lehrer?
Jim Lehrer, that's who it was. That's not Larry Wilson. Larry Wilson,
Yeah,
he's
unfortunately, he's
Larry
passed
Wilson's
away.
war. Wasn't that the guy? Larry
No,
Wilson's war?
that was a different war. That was a different Wilson.
Oh, okay.
Now that Larry Wilson actually lived on Boca Grande, where I live,
Here.
and he has since passed away, but had a great legacy. Jim Lehrer has retired, but his institute continues, owned by Johnson & Johnson. Actually, it's very, very doing very well.
Good.
But that's in
Well,
Orlando.
here, breaking news for you, Rob.
What is
Bank
it?
of America drops Merrill Lynch name in rebranding efforts. Out
Wow.
with Merrill Lynch's name. So it looks like they are going to keep the, I guess them keep staying in that business. At one point, there was rumor they were going to sell off the Merrill Lynch component.
We're going to turn them into order takers.
Wow. Wow.
It's got to be depressed. Why do you got to depress Rob on the beginning of our call, Larry? Jeez.
Come on.
That's like saying breaking news, your sister's going to prom with the captain of
I
the football team. Oh, he's already out of all of his hundreds of thousands of shares way back when.
You're right. You are absolutely correct. No, I did, and thank the Lord I did. And I haven't owned any Bank of America for quite a while. Well, that's interesting. That will have some shock waves.
Yeah,
But
I'm not so sure the B of A name is better than the Merrill Lynch name.
I
good for
think that
you guys.
Morgan Stanley should add it to the back of our name.
I think it's a good it's good for you guys, so good going. It's so funny that people have such a good opinion of the job that's been done in the last 10 years, and then there's a lot of us that don't agree with that. But that's okay. There's a lot of stockholders that still think it's great, and I think it's been horrible. That's okay. You guys have actually done well. UBS has done well. You've done well, and I think Merrill has really blown it in terms of their market share, their domination of certain markets and all that. But I still think they'll be fine, but I think they have really not progressed at the rate they should have. But that's not anything about you guys except opportunity to grow your practices.
Exactly.
So what's on your mind other than that?
We've been doing our Supernova team lunch before our meetings on Mondays.
Good.
So what we were discussing today, was we're committing, I know this is not news to you, but we're going to be doing financial plans for all of our clients. And we're committing to starting to knock those out methodically as a team, or we're going to have time we're actually going to be time blocking to achieve this, because it's very difficult to do unless we commit to just sitting down and doing them. We've been gathering a lot of information from clients, you know, during review sessions and stuff, but we need to start putting these things down, because right now we're not delivering on the full Supernova promise without doing that. And it's also a big initiative for our bosses as well, so we're killing two birds with one stone there. We need to do further segmentation. I actually transitioned three clients this week. One of them was one of my first clients. That is a very hard thing to do, but that's happening. We're finding the more time we have, the more business we're finding. And, like, at least for me, I'm talking, like, over the last year or two, bringing in, like, $10 or $15 million of existing relationship assets just because I'm spending the time talking to people and realizing, oh, you have $500,000 at Ally Online Bank, you know, bring that in here and, you know, I'll do better. And I just can't believe how many of those conversations I've been missing, you know, because I'm too busy running around doing other shit. I'm actually halfway through your new book. So I'm enjoying it from a standpoint of it's bringing to light a lot of the issues that we're having. And one of the things we talked about at lunch today was we may be, and full disclosure, the guys haven't gone through this as much as I did, but when I was reading your section on the five-star model, yep. Not only are we not doing it right, but we're also, I think we're also pretty much all in the wrong positions. Like in this second book, you really dig in a little bit more in terms of the roles, and with what I'm seeing in those roles, I think that we might be aligned really wrong right now. So we do not have our business plan, and it may be partly a blessing, because we may need to burn it down and restart on that. Just because I'm seeing, like, you know, people who need to reach the top shelf, or we're picking the short person, or, you know, like, just to me it's glaring. I don't know. You know, we'll see how it is for the rest of the team. But when I got through that section, I said we all need to reread this section of this book together and revisit this. And then Larry's been really good about doing the action, the activity trackers. Yeah. That's something else you talk about in this book a lot, where it's probably the most underutilized tool in the Supernova portfolio. And we are mm-hmm. going to commit to using, you know, we can't say your stuff doesn't work if we're not doing it. So, you know, the way I'm looking at it is that you have a foundation that's given away $5 million and I haven't made $5 million yet. So that's how I'm looking at it right now. You know, you've seen this movie before, and, you know, I'm sure that there's going to be certain things that work better for us, or, you know, like, there's certain things that I'm just never going to, completely abandon. Like, you know, Barry and I are, you know, we're real big into long meetings in people's houses and getting in real deep with the family and everything. And I think that's part of what makes me what I am as a financial advisor. And I don't think I'm ever going to give that up, but I do think that I can be a lot more focused during the week on my check-in calls and so forth, in terms of limiting the amount of time wasted and not having those turn into 1 and 2 hour blow up my day type situations. So those are the starting topics, as well as we're discussing bringing on new people, and, you know, we're going back and forth about, do we bring in the hunter who can bring in more assets, or bring in the person who can service more on the back end? Because not only are we not missing plans, we're also not doing our executive summaries for meetings like we're supposed to be doing. And, you know, there's a lot of touch points that are – it's a lot to run through just Christine. But she says she's handling it well and she's not backed up. But I have a feeling that if we started to really do this thing that we're supposed to, it would get burdensome quickly.
Okay. Other guys, what did you get out of the meeting, lunch meeting you had today, and other thoughts?
I can go now. It's Barry. It's time to stay up. You know, for me, I've got to start doing my sheets. I'm still slacking on filling out those sheets.
The activity tracker.
Yeah. I haven't been doing them. And I'm realizing that, you know, it's when we're busy, it's easy to just say, I'm not going to worry about it today. And I have to change it, and I have to get it into a habit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I'm resending that to both of you right now, just so you both have it at your desk. Larry, are you there?
I am.
Do you have any other thoughts?
No, it's just a matter of trying to figure out. One of the gentlemen that we're talking with is a ex-Marine sniper, Army sniper, who has a Purple Heart and seems to be very driven, seems to be somebody that does not like to fail. But does not have a network, does not seem to have a big network of family and or relationships, let alone South Florida, but just in general. But he's done some institutional work on the 401k side for major corporations when he was at JP Morgan. So we know he can present, he's competent. But, you know, we don't just need somebody to – we're kind of in a betwixt and between in a sense, because we do realize that we need more internal work, helping us with the financial plans, helping us get people online doing some of these things to take advantage of the marching orders that are out there. Just so you know, come April – if there's an account that you have that has a monitored financial plan and they're signed up online, there's a 2% enhancement to the payout.
Oh. Well.
So once again, that kind of feeds in with everybody having a financial plan in this process.
I like that incentive.
Yeah.
So if we can do that and, you know, get them there, that helps everybody, helps the clients, helps us, helps the firm.
Well, one of the critical elements that you need in hiring is optimism. That's the number one thing in hiring.
Okay.
So write that down and remember that forever, okay? Because you're always going to need to hire people.
Okay.
So
optimism
can be learned too, by the way. You don't have to be a realist or a pessimist. Pessimists like to call themselves realists. But an optimist is a critical element to success in this. Think about it, right? Because you're getting knocked down a lot, but you know, you've got to believe that really big account is still waiting for you out there and they really want you. You just have to get through all the garbage to get to them. So the other is risk-taking. You need to be a risk-taker and comfortable with risk. You have to be smart enough. You can't make people smart enough. If they're not smart enough, you're in trouble. And you know, you got to have the work ethic. You know, people have problems when somebody doesn't have the work ethic. They just don't put in they don't make the commitment. So with our sniper, okay, I would, he passes the obviously he couldn't be a sniper without being a risk taker.
Correct.
And two, he's got to be an optimist because he's got to believe he's got to make it, right?
Yeah.
And you couldn't do that job if you're a pessimist. I'm going to get killed today. And I'm sure he's a hard worker. The only thing that I would make sure I check the box on would be, is he smart enough?
Yeah, I mean, he does have his master's. He's got his Series 3. He's been an institutional desk. He manages institutional traders at another firm, one of the online discount places. He does have his master's. He seems to be smart. You know, he's actually a scout sniper, so he's the one that does all the calculations for the wind and all that other stuff with the telescope, operating as a two-man team. So he's like the numbers guy, I guess.
I think he'd be fascinating. You know, if he's outgoing and an optimist, you know, then you got yourself a good hire. I think he sounds, you know, that's the kind of guy, of course, I'd love to interview because you're going to hear, you know, such good stories. When I interviewed people, I would go back and have them tell me what they did well in high school. That's how far back I'd go. I want to know them. I want to know who they hung around with in high school. What were they like? And you know, what were they good at in school? And what weren't they good at?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And then I'd do that in college. And then I'd do it in every job that they were in.
Okay.
From then on, including the military. And, you know, he obviously was an enlisted man, so he went in either before he went to college or after. So you got to think to yourself.
Before.
Yeah, he had to go before, so it might have been an economic decision why he went there. You want to know the answer to why did he choose the Army and not go to college directly? And that's okay. I mean, they're all good choices. It's just you need to know him and why he made certain decisions. You want to check for judgment. Judgment is something you can't teach. You can teach optimism. You can't teach judgment. So you want to make sure that he's used good judgment in his decision making all along. So those are just some advice things on hiring. But you know, read the other thing is to read the chapter I wrote in the book on teams, Supernova Teams. I have a whole chapter on hiring. Read that. It's as good as anything. I mean, I basically put everything in there that I did in terms of hiring.
That's the other book, though, right?
Yeah, that's the third book. And there was one, seriously, there was one thing that I did well was hire, okay? I had a knack for being able to hire really well. And, of course, in a management job, think about it, right? If there's anything you need to do well, it's hire. And then I was good at training. So guess what? I had very little turnover compared to, you know, if we kept 30% of our hires, that was considered success. And if I was able to keep 60 or 70% of my hires, my costs were dramatically less than my competition, which was my own firm, right?
Right.
Because we're all stack ranked against each other and everything. So my game was hire carefully, fire quickly, and train like a madman to give them every opportunity for success.
Yeah, I actually highlighted a note on that. McKinsey fires the bottom 10% of their people every year or something you were saying?
Yeah, they do, actually.
To make sure they don't...
yeah, you just...
They
it's
don't
just a,
support
it's,
mediocrity.
Right. It's a commitment to excellence. That's it. But, you know, am I committed to excellence? Am I really committed to excellence, or do I accept mediocrity? Do I accept mediocrity at any level? So I think your sniper would be a guy I would, you know, personally love to work with, because he's going to get it. You know, he's going to be, assuming he's not PTSD and all screwed up by it, he's going to be a guy that understands plan, process, and rituals. And if you don't do it right, you die. And that's,
right.
You know, that was, you know, that's why it's so easy for me to be, frankly, successful at Merrill because of my Navy, you know, my Navy flight experience and the understanding process. And
our manager's real high on him, and one of our coworkers spent about 2 hours talking to him. He's a former pilot as well, and they both been glowing about this guy, you know. Our manager thinks that, like, his story with being the Marine and everything, like, once he's able to get that translated down to the client level, it's going to be very powerful. You know, people are going to trust him and look to him as a leader.
Gentlemen, there's no bond stronger. You know, my buddy Andy Edelman used to say, you know, I'd say, you know, Andy was a Marine. He said, and he would correct me. He said, I am a Marine. I mean, they are never anything but a Marine. And so you talk about a network that's as strong as there is.
So, I was also real interested in, you know, you revisited your father's radical delegation discussion, and my problem is who do I delegate to? Like, I mean, I've got Christine, you know, but like...
Well, you got Christine, Barry, and me.
You got leverage. You know, leverage is the name of the game, and you can have as many interns as you can manage to scrounge up and get through the system, and you can hire people, and you can, you know, take some risk. And the risk is that it costs you money and it doesn't pay off. But to me... I always had two interns working for me all the time that I paid, and it was worth it. I had leverage. You know, I had a super assistant, I had a sales manager, and I had two interns. And that, I mean, because I didn't have, I mean, I had 14 states and, you know, 2,000, 2,500 financial advisors. I had to have leverage.
Right.
But that's also, Ryan, why I keep asking you if you need me to do anything. I know that you were busy doing stuff, and the stuff you were doing was extremely productive, bringing in assets and, you know, getting the paperwork ready for some of the AI stuff. So anything that I could do, that's why I kept asking you if I can do anything to take something off your plate so that it levers me to at least continue to move the, you know, the ball forward.
No, yeah, Larry's been great about that. Like I've been, you know, I've been very fortunate. Things have been rolling so well lately, and it's just, yeah. I mean, Rob, like it sounds kind of pathetic, but like, I mean, I told my wife, I said, like, we have business that we're not even getting in for this month because we haven't even gotten around to like writing the business, you know, and that's not a good. That's not something to be proud of, or that's not good. I mean, it's good that things are going that well, but, like, you know, it's just...
Right. I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, it's almost like you're embarrassed by your success because it's like, I can't even keep up with it. And that's what we dream about, right? So celebrate it, but then call on your buddies to help you and... you know, get the management team to help you temporarily even. I mean, if things are going that good, but trust me, they're not that good for everybody.
Right.
So management will be very helpful when it comes to bringing in more money.
Yeah, I mean, they... Well, we talked to our manager, like, because there's another person in the training program who is she's an African American female, mature. I don't know how old she is, but she's probably somewhere in her mid 40s to early 50s. And she's been an internal sales consultant. I think she was an internal sales consultant. Was it Merrill's Alternatives, Larry? I can't.
Somebody's AI department. I don't know who.
Yeah. So, I mean, she understands complex products. She came on as a kind of like a technology associate to help people with financial plans and all that stuff. And her role's kind of morphed into a financial planning associate, then going into a production role at the end of this year. And she's kind of what we thought we were looking for in the first place, which was kind of more of the combo admin that could potentially bring in business as well. But, you know, she doesn't go into production for another 9 months. And the way the firm is right now, we don't think that they would release her from that role sooner, because then a lot of other financial advisors wouldn't have the help to do the financial plans that they want to do.
But we should still we can still talk to Mike about that, because I think Mike likes her. He also likes the idea. You know, it hits some of the boxes for him as well. So we can talk to him about that.
Yeah, I mean, our management team wants us to bring on someone and have them succeed, because they're getting judged a lot harder now on internal success of having the trainees go through.
Ryan, you should mention
deals.
That list that you were talking about, because I think that's interesting.
I'm sorry, what?
That list that you were talking about that you had.
Which list?
What you think management's getting judged on.
Oh.
Yeah.
At the regional conference. Go ahead.
I mean, you can ask them how they're being paid. You know, always ask them. And just say, okay, how can we help you?
Yeah.
You know, what are you happy getting paid this year? You know, what are you just being judged?
Yeah, we can ask for sure, but I think it's pretty clear. They handed out something at a regional conference where I think these 10 things were talked about, the percentage of clients that have active financial plans, banking enrollment, lending, Morgan Stanley online adoption, electronic delivery and authorization enabled. Percentage of households contacted via phone call. What do you think our percentage of households contacted via phone call was over the last 12 months?
100%.
That's what I would have thought, too. It says 94. So
I can guarantee you that's still better than most, but that's because we have some accounts that we probably inherited that we don't even know who they are.
That's potential. Households contacted via digital touch points and automatic email campaigns, advisors on a team, check, new $1 million households, check, and then clients doing the asset aggregation tools on our website. So I have a feeling those are the metrics that the firm's looking at if they're passing those out to us at the meeting. We can definitely ask them, but yeah, we know that some of those are key triggers at the firm right now.
Well, the other thing to know is what are the percentages? Because not everything is the same. So, you know, I always want to know what the...
Are you asking their goals are? I mean, it tells us our percentages, but you mean what their goals are?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if it makes more sense for financial plans than it does for... online, they get 50% credit for, you know, 50% of their bonuses for financial plans, and 2% is for online, then
right.
They'd be more than happy to lose online.
Right. So, you know, you want to, it's the 80-20 rule, right? This, if we move the needle here, just like you said, if you move the needle here, this is really going to this is huge for his compensation. So clearly you want to, you know, assuming it aligns with your mission and purpose and everything, then you're going to want to help him because he's going to help you. So that's exactly right. So not everything is equal, but that's the only thing that I would suggest is just make sure you know the percentages and what are the items that he's going to get ranked on.
All right. Then another question I have for you, because I don't know if this is good or bad, but I think about this shit all the time. Like, I'm trying to turn it off more, but, like, I feel like now that things are starting to really go, it's like I'm kind of getting the bug, so to speak. You know, like, I was driving, you know, just like right now down here, like, we have I-95 in South Florida, you know, have you ever been down here? Do you know what I-95 is, our big highway down here? Yeah.
Trust me, I know, and it's a parking lot.
Yeah. It's always under construction all the time. You know, no matter where you are, some stretch is screwed up. But, like, down here in South Florida, we're literally, you know, like, the infrastructure is not big enough to handle all the people that are coming in. And downtown Boca, we're dealing with this even worse because they're building all these high-rises and everything down here is two lanes. So, you know, like, there's no parking. But what we're trying to figure out is, like, how big of a plunge do we take? Like, do we go and hire, you know, another admin person and another salesperson and basically say, you know what, if we need to step back here, we need the capacity to grow at the pace we want to grow at? You know, like, or do you think, like how do we know when we're kind of at our capacity limitations for where we, you know,
when you ask me the question, when you start asking me that question, that's when you know where you are.
Okay. So if we're thinking about it, there's a good chance that there's some issues.
Yeah. I mean, I had a guy that I worked with who was in Florida, and he was a Navy pilot. And every year we'd have this asset gathering campaign. And if you won, you went a trip to Europe or something. We called it the Masters. Anyway, so I'd win it every year, and he'd win it. So we'd go, and we'd sit down and have lunch every year. And he'd ask me, what should I do? I said, I'd hire another assistant. I mean, he'd tell me what he was doing, and he'd say, what should I do? I said, hire another assistant. And then he brought his son on, and then he asked me, I said, hire another assistant. Every year he came back, he won every year, and his business grew like crazy. So it's not as blatant and as simple as that, but it's pretty close to that.
Okay. But that's kind of what I don't know if it would be the young lady that we're talking to, or whether it would be the Marine gentleman that can help do some of the admin, but still we want them outside as well.
Yeah, like, would you be comfortable if we brought this guy on and said, hey, we own you until 11 a.m., and then after that you're free to do whatever the hell you want to do?
Well, like, that was the idea you were thinking of.
Yeah, which I think is a brilliant idea.
Rob, is that something that you think could work?
What's his job? What do they want to hire him for?
New broker training.
Yeah, I wouldn't mess with that. I'd make him a broker, and then I'd hire another sales assistant.
But hiring a sales assistant
isn't easy,
and it's more expensive than hiring a...
I know, but he's not. His energy is going to not be in anything else but growing, and you want him to be successful. Okay, so remember, when it's hard, that's good, because others aren't able to do it. If you can figure it out, then you're going to have a leg up on everybody else. So you want a person that you would hire as a CA, and he'd be very successful in that role for 3, 4, 5 years. Okay.
Is that client associate? Is that CA?
Yeah. So you're going to build your practice around this person. You really don't want them half in the game. I understand economic matter, but, you know, you want to do the right thing rather than just adjust for economics. Hire interns. They're free. And they're not free. You got to pay them $10 or
they something. They can't do anything here.
Yeah. Interns here with the rules and regs seem to be very disheartening.
Yeah, I know. It's hard. It's too bad because it used to be a great job.
But you're saying we should look for the person who wants this as a second career so they can have health insurance and doesn't really need to advance further, and they'd be happy just making their check and doing a good job doing that, but doesn't want equity in our team and doesn't want more. They just want to come here and do that, and that's it.
Kind of. I'd like them to be more ambitious than you're describing and smarter than you're describing, but I also want them to have a family and, you know that, you know, life doesn't begin and end with the job, that they have a life and that they want to, this is the good balance for them, you know, they
right.
can, don't have
but don't-
to... It, they're not a risk taker, the opposite of your sniper, okay? They're a non-risk taker. They like the security of the job. They like to have the health care. But they're smart as hell. They just never would have the guts to become a financial advisor.
A lot of the big teams have these guys. I worked with a $12 million team at Wachovia that had one of these guys that was like the basically the brain center of the team, and he never... Like the advisor took him everywhere, and when he took a deal, like, he threw the guy, like, you know, $1 million or whatever it was to stay with him. But, like, the guy's just always going to be the inside guy. And same thing with...
With Kurt's guy?
Yeah, Kurt's guy, yeah. Nathan, for sure.
Okay.
And then I think you're seeing that also kind of like Eric's got Holly. You know, Holly's, like, CFA, and, you know, she's real... But she wants to be the operations manager of the team. She doesn't want to be an advisor and doesn't want to go do sales. And
that's your
I think a lot of the big teams have those types of people. But they can make a good living. I mean, Pelican Bay Group's the same way. You know, they're like another $10 million team, and they've got a CFA that doesn't do business. He just works inside the practice and runs all the data and writes some pieces from time to time.
Yeah, that's what you need. I mean, they don't have to start out as, you know, they can just be smart and, you know, out of school and really smart, but really hardworking and just conscientious and learn the business and be great.
But you want someone young and hungry as opposed to the, you know, second career or like the CSA or assistant that took off like 10 years to have kids and wants to get back in the game some, like.
Yeah, no, I'll take the CSA that wants to get back in the business.
Okay.
I have no problem. As long as they have a great reputation, they're hardworking. I mean, I'd even steal one from the competition if I thought there was a good enough one out there.
Yeah.
These people are worth gold. They're gold, okay? I mean... When I had one, I mean, I used to stack rank the CSAs
right.
and against the FAs and see if my best CSAs were working with my best FAs.
What do you think, in terms of compensation, we're not, like, at Morgan Stanley, they basically pay them, like, somewhere between 40 and 60 and then expect us to make up the difference. Like, it's pretty much... Everyone here gives like 1% of sales to their CSAs. It's kind of like the baseline. So if you do 2 million, that's another 20,000 of bonuses, just kind of as expected standard. What do you think these people should be being compensated at? Like, you know, I clearly don't want my CSA making more than I am, but, you know.
No, I mean, that's fine. That's a fine income. Okay. Let's say 70,000, 80,000. That's a great income. I mean, you know, if you get somebody that becomes an integral part of the team and they're, you know, they're critical to your success in terms of just doing everything and you never have to worry and nothing goes wrong, then maybe you bump it up a little. But until then, you know, you're right in the ballpark.
Okay.
So we're definitely paying her a lot more than what she was getting, but we're also paying her a lot more than what the average person gets. We just haven't paid her as much as what we did pay Robert. But other than that,
she's just about there now, actually.
So she's earned her way right back up there. Yes.
Yeah. Plus, we let her become a coach, which gives her like another $3,000 or $4,000 a year. And she has to help train some other people from time to time, and we didn't block that, I guess. And we're giving her $1.25 roughly on our business, so we're paying her about $25,000 on top of that.
So that's a lot more than.
But you don't see a scenario where you don't need to be paying your top CSA like 110 or 120. They're not. You know, people aren't paying them.
If you're doing 10 million, sure. But until then, you know, 5-7 million, I don't know. You know, you guys have got to, I mean, there's a certain, let's be, you know, let's be reasonable here. Trust me, people outside of our business do not make what they make inside our business.
So, another thing is they're merging another office into our office. And quite frankly, like, they're going to have some operations managers sharing single offices. Like, I think that management's kind of pushing back on this because they're not sure we're going to have room to bring in more help. Like, literally, like, we don't know if there's going to be a chair in the building
and you better,
for more help.
You better do it soon, then.
Okay, wonderful. Larry's been the most successful at kind of getting out in the community and getting involved in boards and stuff like that. Barry and I still need to get some more of that going on in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
I found two things I'm interested in right now. Like, one of them is the honor flight that my grandfather did. It flies the veterans up to D.C. for it flies up like 80 and 90 year olds, you know, Korean War and World War II, and they're starting to get to Vietnam people now. But it's a real worthy cause, in my opinion. My grandfather was like the greatest thing he did in the last decade of his life. He just loved it. It was wonderful. And then the other thing is for me is youth that they become caretakers, like high school kids that have to take care of parents that are terminally ill or grandparents that raise them that are sick and stuff like that. And I think those two are two things I could kind of get behind. So I know you say if you're getting involved in one of these, the idea is like to kind of say you want to be president within 5 years and then move on to something else. But like, as you're kind of vetting the organization out a little bit, honestly, you know, obviously we want to make sure that we care about what their mission is, but what do you think we look for? Like, do we want to be with something that's well established and quite large, or could we be more impactful in a smaller, less successful group so far, whatever?
It's not hard. You look on the board and you see those people. You do your research on them, and if they would be the kind of people that would meet your minimums, then you pick the right board. Now, if you
want to. One of my clients is on the board of one of them.
Okay. If you want to, but, you know, do your homework. Look at all the members of the board. What percentage would meet your minimums? Okay. And then, I mean, I'm telling you the economics of it. If you have a personal passion for it, then do it. And, you know, that wouldn't be as important an economic return as the psychological return. So, but if you're asking me the economics, you want to be on as wealthy a board as you can afford to be on.
Right.
Meaning where the downstroke is 10 grand and you can afford 10 grand, then that's the board you're on. But if the downstroke is 100 and you can't afford that, then you can't be on that board yet. Okay. And, you know, and the one with, that requires $100,000 is going to have multimillionaires and billionaires on it, probably. And that's cool, but you got to be able to play in that pool, you know.
So something Barry on our team is probably one of the more knowledgeable people on divorce law and divorce from a financial advisor standpoint that I put him up against, you know, 99 out of 100 people down here. And that's a niche that he can really go after. So assuming that Barry and all of us were too stupid to figure it out, what would you tell us in terms of, because so far we have been, what would you tell us in terms of how do we get him, you know, from yours, this would be an acquired niche or not a natural niche per se, but this is, I guess he kind of came about it naturally, but this is one of those circles that we're on the outside of that we're trying to get into. You know, he needs to find somebody that's within that community to sponsor him, to bring him in, essentially, like a divorce attorney that can show him around at different conventions, or kind of what would you?
Right. Well, I mean, you already have a you know, access to that group, or you wouldn't be so well regarded in that market. So you have attorneys or you have networks in it already. I would just say expand on those and ask their advice. Remember how we do this. If you're interested in a particular niche, the first thing you do is you meet with them and ask them if they think it's a good idea. The second question is, if you were me, how would you go about building your practice around divorce attorneys? And they'll tell you exactly how to do it. I mean, I'm not the authority. I can speculate on what it would be like to build a practice in that market in your community, but they know exactly how to do it. Okay? So
yeah, I was just reading about that last night.
Right. I'll tell you.
Yeah, you said like there's like a free industry trade magazines.com and, you know, you know, we have to learn the language first and make sure that we're ready to swim in those waters.
Yeah, and possibly write a ghostwritten article or do something that, or even not a ghostwritten article, but an article that gets them, you know, that's a start as well.
I like the example you talked about the one whose parents are both in the sheet metal workers union. And he parlayed that, and he was able to get in with a lot of unions because he was, quote-unquote, one of them, so to speak.
Yeah, he's with Morgan Stanley. He's Craig Dobbs.
Okay. So, like, my whole family's firefighters and cops, but a lot of them are kind of, like, right on that border, like.
He's the biggest producer. I think he's the biggest producer in your firm in that particular niche. And I hired him out of Ball State.
Testicle tech.
Really, it was, I mean, he was just a kid. He was selling, while he was in college, he was selling for Northwestern Mutual Life, and he was their top sales college student salesman. So he's a great guy. He lives in Indianapolis. You can call him, say, hey, I want to build my business around unions. What do you think? Well, and it doesn't hurt him to have access to unions to call him, and he'll get the business and split it with you. So, you know, there's all kinds of things you can do. He'll fly his plane down to see you.
Where's he out of?
Indianapolis.
Okay. Yeah, I guess there's two ways to go about it. Like, for instance, I'm sure I've mentioned this young guy I know that's got this commercial plumbing business that's taken off. Like, I guarantee you that the commercial plumbers are an underserved market financially in terms of there's not a lot of advisors that are going after commercial plumbers. Like, would you suggest we just kind of, you know, parlay something like that?
Sure. Go to your guy and say, hey, I'm thinking about business. Building my practice around commercial plumbers. What do you think? And he'll say, well, there's four of us that do pretty well in this market. but around the country, sure. There's lots and lots of them.
Sure.
So when you pick a niche that's narrow, where you're not going to have, you know, thousands in your community like you would doctors, then you need to go outside of your community, your city, outside of your city and your state to others. But you can become the person known to understand their needs and wants, and they trust you and they will give you business. So it would be no different than the same with the unions. You know, that union business became a city business, which became a state business, which became a national business. And so we got the national sheet metal workers, and then we got the national building trades council. And then we got I took many trips to Washington with him to meet with different heads of the unions on the national level. And so hence he became explosive. So, I mean, I'm very familiar with how to do this, but read what I tell you to do in the book and then do it. Okay. I didn't hold back anything. I didn't have any special secret that I said, well, I'll only give to you guys when I coach you. It's all.
How broad can we go on that? Like, could we say like blue collar business owners that employ union workers? Like, is that too broad?
Way, way too broad. I want it narrow, okay. narrow.
Okay. What do you think? Firefighters or?
No, I'm just saying, like, for instance, plumbers, roofers,
plumbers. Plumbers only. Plumbers, stick with plumbers and just do plumbers for now.
Back, Daryl Baker worked with me. He ran the IT department back when I headed up that bank in Lake Worth. He came over to be a commercial plumber with the plumbing company up in Stewart, and he's more an IT operations guy, knows nothing, never turned a wrench in his life, but we can talk to him anytime you want as well.
Okay.
Sure, he would know. Yeah, these guys make a lot of money. Heating and air conditioning people in Florida too, the big ones, they do really well.
Yeah.
And they're blue collar. They get no attention from our business, you know.
Yeah, that's just trying to figure out.
But you spoke on one of their calls once, didn't you, Ryan?
Yeah, but it wasn't like, I mean.
Could you write an article or just some common sense, some little article and hey, forward out to this to your team about IRAs or about, you know, why starting early makes sense or the new.
Yeah, we could. I just right now I'm at the stage where it's like, do I want it? Is that the niche I want to go after? You know, like just with my background and technical and I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Like. But to Rob's point, there's a whole bunch of people going after cardiologists. You know, like that's not
right.
That's not new.
But you want to go after something that, just like I said, you know, look where the money is first, okay? Then look where your passion is, and see if there's an intersection of those two things. It's hard. I would never build my practice around union people. Because I happen to be a capitalist that believes in democracy. And when you talk to real serious union people, they don't believe in capitalism. I mean, they really do believe that socialism or a form of that is best for the workers. So that would be in direct conflict with my values. So I would not make a good person, even though I faked it. When I went and helped my buddy, help Craig bring in this business, I had to really zip it because it was hard to listen to them. So I couldn't do that 12-4-2, okay? I would go crazy. So be sure that what you build is something, these are the people you're going to enjoy being around.
Like, I've suffered from atrial fibrillation. So I've had to deal with like a lot of like cardiologists and, you know, I also have a pre-med background and microbiome and, you know, I used to do
do all that fun stuff. You know, would that count as like giving me an in towards something where like it's something I was passionate about? Like if I wanted to deal with electrophysiology people or stuff like that, or allergist. I have allergies or GI doctors. You know, like I have celiac. Okay. You know, like
if you brought it up, so I'm going to have to leave you guys because tomorrow I go in for an ablation.
Oh.
AFib.
Okay.
So anyway,
are you doing cryo or which method are you doing? Do you know?
The cryo, right? The cryo with the balloon.
Right.
Right. Dr. Eckert up in Sarasota, so I'm going up there to have that done. So he's a fabulous guy, and he seems great personality, and he does like 1,000 of these, you know, at 100,000 a pop. Now, he doesn't get the 100,000, but that's what they bill it out at. So somebody's making some money here, okay? Mm-hmm. And so to me, if you have the disease, you understand the disease, you're a science guy, you know, he's an engineer. You know, to me, he's more of an electrical engineer than he is a doctor. He is a doctor, obviously. But
sure.
He understands the electrical engineering of the human body and what makes it happen. He's very specialized, and he's a fun and interesting person. To me, he would make a great client. Okay? So that's what – so there's a – There's a good story for you, sure. So, I think doctors are fine. I'm not a big guy for lawyers. I always had trouble with them, but I had some, but I just wasn't as good a fit for me. The doctors were a good fit. Business owners and executives were great fit for me because they're all decision makers.
Anyone who's too busy to be a pain in the ass is a good fit.
Exactly. This guy is working all the time. And so he'd be a great fit. You know, he doesn't have time for any of that. But he's an interesting guy and a nice person. So anyway, so gentlemen, I got to leave you. And I'm going to spend the night at the Ritz up in Sarasota and go in for a 5:30 operation. See if I can get rid of this AFib. So...
All right. Good luck and Godspeed.
Thank you. Fuck. Thank you. Yeah, thanks.
Thanks.
It'll work. Thank you, guys. Okay.
All right.
Let's go to the next call. Thanks. Bye-bye.